Evening and welcome to A Walk to the Other Side. My name is Dr. Carla Wills Brandon, and for the next hour, we will be shedding light on the massive amounts of phobia that we as a Western culture have towards death. Ugh, I just get so tired of it. It seems like I'm constantly confronting it. I was telling the host of VBS that I am still on London time. I'm still suffering from a little bit of jet lag. I was in the Merry City, as they call it, last week, presenting a paper at a conference that dealt with slave labor camps and the Holocaust 60 years after. And my paper was on post-traumatic stress syndrome found in the children of Holocaust survivors and the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren, along with the children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren of those parents who were in the gulags of Russia, which, of course, Russia still refuses to own up to. There were so many gulags. People were shipped off to Siberia if they disagreed with the government or if they said something that was somewhat suspicious or if they sneezed sideways. And then also, I took a look at the children of Germans who were living in Germany at the time of the Holocaust, who experienced incredible abuse as a result of having Hitler as their dictator. I heard a story today, as a matter of fact, from a man who shared how while he was growing up in Germany, his parents had a bakery, and his mother found a sign on their bakery door that said, "You will not sell bread to Jews." And this was dictated by Adolf Hitler, and so she promptly took the sign and tore it up. And she was accosted by the Nazis, and her husband was sent to the Russian front. So anyway, that's what I was doing there, and I went to Westminster Abbey. It's one of my most favorite places to visit when I am in London. Incredible history, lots of crypts of all sorts of interesting, fantastic people, from Henry VIII to Mary Queen of Scots to artists and poets, and just wonderful, wonderful epitaphs on these gravestones. And I went and spent a couple of hours roaming around there. And then another favorite place of mine is to go visit a Knights of Templar church. The Knights of Templar are a mystical organization that were around in the 13th, 12th, 11th century. And basically what they did is they assisted pilgrims who wanted to go visit Jerusalem. And they were persecuted terribly because they amassed great fortunes of money. And so what the royals accused them of participating in black magic and started burning them at the stake, and just incredible history. They had a very metaphysical bent to them, lack of fear of death. And so there are very few of these original Templar churches in Europe, and I always like to go to this one that's in the heart of London, so I went and perused it. And then the third thing that I like to do is I like to go to the British Museum. The British Museum is totally free of charge. The royals in the UK decided that the masses needed to be culturized. And so anybody can go to the British Museum, and I like to go up and visit the mummies up there. They have all of these wonderful mummies that have been preserved. And I went and investigated an original copy of the Book of the Dead, which is fascinating. In ancient Egyptian times, and in other cultures too, ancient cultures, the Book of the Dead was put in with the deceased, so the deceased had instructions for how to navigate the afterlife. So I went and I took a look at that in between doing my presentation and talking to other researchers and archivists, and then we took a trip to the German embassy and met the German ambassador and listened to some incredible Israeli music. But I have to tell you, I am so glad to be home. My son was in Israel at the same time, and I just learned today that a suicide bomber walked into the mall where he was. He was at this mall about a week ago and blew himself up. So I'm very grateful that he is home. I'm very grateful that he is safe. And hopefully I will get past this incredible jet lag. Thank goodness for melatonin and valerian root and B12 and some other things. One of my degrees is in nutrition, so very useful to know about vitamins and herbs and things of that nature when I'm dealing with jet lag. So anyway, I came back and booted up my computer. Oh, my laptop was stolen, by the way. Homeland Security, go team! Stuck a bunch of stickers all over my suitcase, and when I got to my hotel in Bayswater, which is it's sort of the Asian section, one of the Asian sections of London, great place to go get some good Asian food. And there are a lot of Arabs living in that neck of the woods. And so you find sarma, which is a meat dish, all sorts of incredible, wonderful foods all over the place. Just, it's a good thing I walk when I'm there and go up and down the stairs traveling the tube. Otherwise, I'd be as fat as a house. But when I got back, I booted up my computer, and I found out that Art Bell's wife, Ramona, had died. And this is very, very sad news for me. When my first book on Departing Visions came out, Art interviewed me on his Coast to Coast radio show, and I've done a lot of radio interviews, being on the other side of the microphone as opposed to hosting a show. And every once in a while, there is an interviewer who is just a prince or a princess. It's been my experience, the majority of radio show hosts who interview, especially if they are on a national level, and I've done Howard Stern, so I could do a whole show on my experiences with him. And a lot of these other characters, it's you know, the show is basically they're very into talking about themselves, and they're not very interested in their guests. They usually have a hidden agenda. But I do have to say, in spite of all the controversy that has surrounded Art over the years, he really is just a delightful host. He's very kind to his guests. We had a wonderful discussion about Departing Visions. He even shared a story about an experience he had, an after-death communication that he had when his own father had passed. So his wife, Ramona, had been, he had received some really, really nasty email at one point from people because she was from the Philippines. But they had a romance that worked for them, and she died very unexpectedly. She had suffered from asthma for years, and basically they're not real sure what the cause of her death was, but it looks like she died in her sleep. So they had not been apart, the two of them, since they were married, and they were married for 15 years. And so if you would like, you can go to plug the word Art Bell into your search engine, and it will pull up his website, his Coast to Coast website. He basically has retired. He doesn't do that many shows anymore, but he still does a show now and then, and his site is still up, and you can pull up pictures of Art and Ramona in the studio playing around and having a really good time. I know that Art really does appreciate emails, so you can, his address is there, or what you can do is you can send cards to Art Bell in care of Premier Radio Network, And that's at 15260 Ventura Boulevard, 5th floor, Sherman Oaks, California, 91403. If you didn't get that, please feel free to email me, or email me if you have any questions about the show, at Drs. D-R-S. Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, at sbcglobal.net. But, you know, I really do feel for Art. He is a real character, and I know he loved her dearly, and I think part of his need to retire and not be quite so involved was to spend more time with his family. Now, something else I was perusing the TV late one night, and I was getting ready for my trip, actually. I was, my son had left for Israel, and I was very into checking the news to make sure that everything was sort of stable over there. Sharon had stroked, and I was worried about repercussions with that. And I became very grateful when I learned that my son and the 200 other college students that he was with being escorted by armed Israeli soldiers. It gave me a sense of security. But I was flipping through the news stations, and Larry King was on. And Larry King had on his show James Von Prague, Sylvia Brown, and one other Hollywood television medium. And there was also, of course, a skeptic who was trying to debunk the medium. And I have very mixed feelings about mediums. The medium, the young man who comes on before me, is just a sweetheart. He is one of these guys. He's the real deal, the real McCoy. Michael is just, he's just a nice guy. Some of these other mediums I get concerned about. I've had my encounters with a few of them, and I get concerned when they become an industry. It's like they set themselves up to be pounded on by the skeptics, and when they do that, they give the rest of us who are investigating life after death experiences a really, really bad name. I've had a few encounters with Sylvia Brown, specifically one of her ex-husbands. At one time, the amazing Randy, who is very big on debunking anything that has to do with life after death investigation, I was supposed to do politically incorrect with him. And what I did, I was very nervous about having to do politically incorrect with Bill Maher, with him, because he tends to be a bit abrasive, and he's very shaming. And so whenever I have to do a media event with somebody like that, I investigate them. And so I discovered newspaper articles that discussed some of his hidden sexual predilections and some of his past behavior that was suspicious. And I discovered that he has some secrets. What would be the timetable on this? He ended up not doing politically incorrect. He had another engagement, and so I was spared having to do battle with the amazing Randy, and I was very, very relieved, because I find that to be a completely, totally, it's a total waste of time. My message is that there is life after death, and that average everyday people like you and me are having psychic experiences, which are very real for us, that stay and share and let us know that physical death isn't the end. Well, shortly after this, Sylvia Brown was supposed to have some sort of encounter with him on Larry King, and I don't know how this happened, but her husband called me up, and he wanted information about the amazing Randy. And so I gave him some information, some of the stuff that I researched, and she used this to protect herself on Larry King, the Larry King show, which is fine. I didn't have a problem with that. But one problems with becoming a Hollywood psychic is that once an individual is an industry, it's no longer about the gift. Sometimes it can become more about making a buck. And I'm not saying that's what Sylvia Brown is doing, but I do have concerns about a lot of these Hollywood TV psychics. So, as most of you know, there was the horrible incident with the mine collapse in West Virginia. I mean, it was just absolutely tragic. In West Virginia, we had these miners who were basically, I mean, they died because of carbon monoxide poisoning. And many of us were glued to our televisions to see who would survive, who wouldn't. From what I understand, there was the one young man who is slowly coming out of a coma, and lots of white light to him. But he like it. Sylvia Brown, she made a major boo-boo blunder. I mean, she like really missed the mark. This was even reported by Fox News, not my favorite news network show, but well, to be honest with you, what happened was now the skeptics are having just a huge field day. So here is just a bit of the story as reported by Fox News. And I'm going to go ahead and read some of it to you. Maybe Brown was thinking the same thing when she was a guest on George Norrie's live syndicated radio show, Coast to Coast. George Norrie, for those of you who don't know, he sort of picked up the slack for Art Bell, and he does a really good job. You can go ahead and just plug his name in, George, and then Norrie, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing it wrong, N-O-O-R-Y. Plug it into your search engine and go to his site. I've talked to him once. He seems like a pretty decent guy. He seems very interested in his guests. I've listened to him a couple of times, do a few interviews. I haven't done an interview with him, but, I mean, he seems to really get in there and dig around. But anyway, she had the bad luck to be commenting on a developing news story, the mining disaster in West Virginia, which took a surprise turn. That tragic twist that the wrong announcement had been made about the miner's fate turned out to be even worse for Brown. Just following the transcript of what occurred, it's clear that the psychic had no idea what had happened to the miners, though she claimed to have been right on top of it. See, I really do believe, after working clinically with psychics, I think that there are people out there who are really gifted, just like Michael, who was on before me. I think he's a really brilliant, gifted guy. But I also know that psychics, they're human. They're human like you and me. And sometimes they're going to miss a beat. And I think it's really, really dangerous when there is a major, major, major national incident going on for a psychic to pop off. I think they've really got to be cautious. So it continues. Maybe you've seen the gravel-voiced Brown on the Montel Williams show. Now, I've done the Montel Williams show several times, and I think he's very sensationalistic. And so the two of them have teamed up, and they've got a sensationalistic thing going on when she appears on his show. Years ago, when I used to do his show, the last time I was called and asked to do his show, I refused. They're very into sensationalism, and I refused to do it the last time because I felt like he was not being really respectful of his guests. Guests would come on. Of course, back then I was doing a lot of work on incest and violence and trauma, and so I'd go up on the show, and these people would get ripped open, and their guts would be spilling out all over the place for ratings, and it really just ticked me off, and I actually confronted Montel and told him that it was totally inappropriate for him to be doing that. And I've watched Sylvia Brown on the show, and she does. She just starts doing readings, and several times people have said, well, no, that's not fitting for me, or that doesn't work for me, and she's very insistent. She appears there almost weekly, dispensing advice and connecting viewers with her loved ones on the other side. She commands a multi-dollar empire from her home base in California, deriving her fortune from in-person readings said to cost, okay, this is where I get so upset, $700 and $200 for work over the phone. I have a real issue with that. I mean, I really, really have an issue with that. Nothing gets my blood boiling than to hear some of the prices these Hollywood psychics are charging clients. You know, they kind of call me the Kmart mental health therapist. I believe that mental health should be affordable to all people. And so I'm very selective of who I see. I don't, I'm not going to overstretch myself. That's why I write books and tell people if they can't afford to buy my books to buy them used, for crying out loud. And this is why I'll never be filthy rich, but at least I can sleep with myself at night. But to charge $700 for a reading, I really have a hard time with that. Her many businesses are advertised on the website that touts her fabulous abilities. Unfortunately, they failed her on Tuesday night. She was in the middle of making predictions when Nori brought up the mining disaster. What has happened for some of these psychics, these Hollywood psychics, is that they spend more time hawking their books and their tapes and trying to sell as opposed to being of service. And I have nothing against anybody trying to make a buck. Seriously, don't get me wrong. But I do have a real problem, and I will state this publicly, and I don't care who has a problem with it. I just get very upset when gouging takes place. Brown, who had just announced that John McCain would run against John Kerry in the next presidential campaign, was relieved to hear from Nori that all but one of the miners was alive. Nori, this is the script. Had you been on the program today, would you have felt if, because they heard no sound, that this was a very gloomy moment and that they might all be dead? Brown, no, I knew they were going to be found. I hate people that say things after the fact. It's just like I knew when the Pope was dead. Thank God I was on Montel's show. I said according to the time, it was 9-something and whatever, Rome time, and I said he was gone, and he was. But the situation was fluid, something Brown obviously didn't sense despite her claims of being able to speak to the dead, among other things. She couldn't have imagined that within a short time the entire story of the miners would change completely and make her look very foolish. So what she did is she popped off and said that she knew they were all alive because she's psychic, and this is a problem. This is a problem. It's a problem when you have grieving family members and relatives and friends who are having a hard enough time with the media who's popping off, but then to have a psychic pop off. Nori soon announced that there were new reports and that all but one of the miners were dead. Brown, who was still in the studio taking questions from listeners, had to say something. Now she was just rifling. I don't think there's anybody alive, maybe one. How crazy for them to report that they were alive when they weren't. Then she added, I just don't think they are alive. She cleared her throat, and there was a deafening pause as Nori went to commercial. That wasn't all. Hanging over the show was a feeling of dread that Brown had shown herself to be without psychic ability, just the good sense to be quick and respond to the news reports. Now, I don't believe that. I do believe she is psychic. But I believe that a lot of these Hollywood psychics, they sell their souls once they become an industry. And the need to, you know, fame can be very, very addictive. I've been on the speaking circuit for the last 15 years, and I've watched speakers. I've seen it. I've watched it. It's basically, it's not my deal. I mean, it really isn't. I'll go and do a talk here and a talk there, but it really doesn't do a whole lot for me. But there are individuals who really get off on a lot of media attention. It's like a drug for them, an addiction to power. And so they do. I've watched them sell their souls and get into alcoholism and drug addiction and sex addiction and cross boundaries and not be true to themselves. I guess several years back I was talking with Art Bell about a possible program, and we both decided that the program would not be something that would be useful for me to do. I could not go there with the topic that was being discussed. And since he's a nice guy, he understood. And that's happened to me before, where I've been asked to do a television show or a radio show, and I'm just not willing to put that spin on it or sell that commodity. I mean, I've gotten in trouble with publishers because I haven't hawked my books. I don't hawk my books a lot when I go on a lot of these shows. But anyway, returning from the news and commercials for their last segment together, Nori tried to dig Brown out of her hole with a softball question. He asked, with your accuracy rate so high, I mean, he is a nice guy, gang, a little codependent. Brown answered by injecting a nonsensical comment. Her earlier proclamation that she's always known the miners were alive had obviously been worrying her. So she said, I didn't really believe that they were alive. And Nori responded with, what's that, the miners? And Brown said, yeah, I didn't think. And see, I've been on the show with you, but I don't think there's any that are going to make it. So, I mean, she recanted after the fact when her tuchus was in a sling. And then Nori said, they say there are 12 gone. I think we threw you a curveball. We were telling you after the fact. He was really trying to bail her. Not good, Nori. You're making the rest of us look bad. Brown, yeah, no, I did believe that they were gone. Brown has been criticized before, but she's never actually outed herself. In March of 2004, James Randi, the amazing Randi, called Brown a liar on Paul Harris's popular St. Louis radio show. Randi continues to run a million-dollar challenge to Brown and others who speak to the dead, like John Edwards and James Von Prague, to put up or shut up and give proof of their miraculous work. So far, no one has accepted. Now, I do have to say, in defense of these mediums, that Dr. Gary Schwartz, who has been researching people who have claimed to have the ability to speak to the dead, he's done some amazing research, and all you have to do is plug in his name, Dr. Gary Schwartz, into your search engine, and you can read about some of his research. So I think these people are gifted, but, you know, they're giving us a bad name, those of us who research. Randi has turned the challenge into a million-dollar gambit for anyone who can prove they have paranormal abilities. After listening to Tuesday night's radio show, I suppose Sylvia Brown is intuitive enough not to put herself into that challenge. So anyway, gang, here we go again. So those of us who are researching and really looking into this stuff, you know, it's always 20 steps backwards, 2 steps forwards. I got a call from the International Association of Near-Death Studies. Their next wonderful convention is going to be in Houston, Texas. It's going to be in the medical center. The spin will be on after-death communications and departing visions, specifically with individuals who have passed with cancer. And I'm going to be speaking there. My first deathbed vision was a byproduct of my mother, and my mother did pass of cancer. And so that conference, if you are able to go to that conference, usually there are some wonderful researchers there. I mean, people who really do some hardcore stuff, who are at universities. Bruce Grayson at the University of Virginia, Melvin Morse, a wonderful pediatrician, Dr. Raymond Moody, sometimes he pops in, and a host of other people bounce in and out and in and out. Jeffrey Long, cardiologist from the Northwest. You have some of these seriously scientifically minded individuals who show up at this conference and they present their research. Barbara Romer used to show up. She was a family physician, and she researched frightening near-death experiences. She passed away a couple of years ago and is now with her departed husband, who she was so incredibly in love with. She actually read a paper for me at, where was it? Some conference I was supposed to be at, and I got sick. And so my paper was going to be on departing vision. And actually, in that paper, I was going to be talking about visitations from the angel of death. Now, in our last show, we began to get into some of that. We took a look at, you know, throughout history, every culture has had some version of the angel of death. And it used to be seen as a symbolic sign that death was coming near. Now, over the years, it has become, the concept of the angel of death has been turned into the grim reaper with the big sickle and the long black cloak. And I shared with you a couple of weeks ago that in Jewish tradition, the angel of death is not seen as something that's frightening. The angel of death is seen as a being that comes to the dying and helps them to cross over to the other side. That's a gentle creature. I shared with you the story about my son, who at 3 years of age had a visitation from an angel of death named Domus, that he talked incessantly about Domus. And when I asked my rabbi if he had ever heard about the term Domus, my rabbi said that it was an Aramaic term for the angel of death, and he wanted to know where my young son had heard it, because it wasn't a term that was used anymore. It wasn't used in Judaic services. And when I told him that my son Josh was talking to Domus, my poor rabbi turned as white as a sheet. So anyway, I want to get back into some of this a little bit again. And there on the web, there is a wonderful site called the Azrael Project. And the purpose of the Azrael Project is to put forth the word of the angel of death and thereby conquer fear through understanding. So here's somebody who's, you know, has a big old chisel and is trying to put a dent in a massive amount of death phobia we have in society today. To make people aware of the essential nature of death and to help humankind see their universe through. In order to understand that death is not something to be frightened of. So I have all of my file of accounts of experiences with the angel of death, and what I decided to do is I decided to use some of the ones from the Azrael Project, and then maybe in a couple of weeks we'll pull out some of mine, because I got interested in reading these. I just thought they were wonderful. They're just brilliant. What's interesting is I have had some accounts of the dying having deathbed visions where they see men in black. Now, I was asked about men in black on Art Bell show and on Jeff Rintz's show, because some individuals think that these men in black are horrible, awful beings who are coming to hurt us. What I have discovered is that the men in black, they're beings that are coming to help the dying cross over. So here is an account that I want to share with you that involves a person all dressed in black, an otherworldly visitation. I have had several episodes. However, most recently, I experienced the angel of death. I am a nurse at a large hospital in Salem, Massachusetts, and one of my patients called me to the bedside and said that she wasn't feeling really good. She had only been admitted for some diagnostic exams. But interestingly, she started to die. We did all that we could to help her, to make sure that she would recover, but there was no way she was going to recover. Anyway, while I was giving the doctor a report, I saw standing at the foot of her bed someone dressed in black. I didn't pay much attention to him because I was concentrating on the patient. This person dressed in black walked away from the bedside and started to leave, and as I was standing in the doorway, I had to move for him to get out of the way, and as he passed me, I felt this huge breeze. I turned to the person who was next to me and asked who this person in black was, and the person said no one had left the room, they hadn't seen anyone in the room. Just at that moment, the patient rapidly regained consciousness. It was at this point that I realized that the person was dressed in black. I intuned it. So anyway, you know, people will have reports about the angel of death. They will talk about the angel of death. Here's another one. I often walk late nights through a cemetery near my home. Do you know how many people are so phobic of cemeteries? They are so frightened of cemeteries. They're frightened of cemeteries, coffins, anything that has to do with death. But then there are those few of us who like to go out there and take pictures of cemeteries. Anyway, one night a few weeks back, I was sitting in a clearing surrounded by a 7-foot cypress. It was very, very quiet. The bushes started to rustle, for it was just a breeze at first, and then it became a gust, a cool gust, which seemed very strange because it was a muggy southern August. Suddenly the air was filled with the scent of jasmine, and the earth smelled like a heavy rain. Each time the wind would gust, the shadow would pass over me, and I had this feeling that there were many presences around me. Suddenly everything grew really still. The shadow seemed to have sunk into the earth, and I figured, well, that's it, time to head home. So I got up and started to walk home, and I could see my own shadow now on the pavement in front of me as the street lights were plainly visible there. There was also a second shadow that was following me. There were two distinct shadows. I turned to look back, but nobody was there. But when I turned back around again, I saw the angel of death, plain as day, standing cross-armed before me about 10 feet away. He was quite a striking image, to say the least. A gust of very cold wind came again beneath my feet. I felt my hair blow upwards as I watched him rise up towards the wind and disappear into the trees. I must have looked seriously stupid standing there with my mouth hanging open. So I just collected myself and walked home. Every once in a while, I could feel him hovering over me. Here is what's so interesting. I never felt so at peace as I did that night. Now, to be honest with you, what's really interesting, when people have these otherworldly encounters, for the most part, some of the terminology that's used to describe these experiences are illuminating, fascinating, brilliant, peaceful, loving, overwhelming. There are no words to describe it. But it's always a very, very intense feeling. Last week we talked about how some of these feelings, they really do imprint on us when we have these encounters. But anyway, this is Lawrence Kilmer out of Jackson, Mississippi. So, you know, the other interesting thing is that most of these people are gainfully employed individuals who don't read New Age magazines, who have all of their teeth and families and responsibilities, and they're not on a bunch of drugs, and they report these experiences. Here's another one. I had a very odd encounter with death. For the past several months, my 7-year-old niece was going on and on and on about a tall black shadow that comes to her in the woods behind her house. Kids are great when they talk about life after death experiences. They're so matter of fact. It's, us adults are the idiots, but they're very matter of fact. My family has always been very open and honest about things of the spiritual nature with the children. If you have kids, and if your children start talking about imaginary friends, or if they start talking about angels, or if they start talking about secret friends or invisible friends, or that needs to be nurtured. But what do we do in our culture? The first thing we do is slam dunk all that. You have an overactive imagination, you're stressed out, my child needs to go to a shrink, get put on a bunch of drugs. This needs to be natured. The reason why kids forget that spiritual side of themselves is because it gets pounded out of them by society. Kids are naturally more in tune to the other side, the other world, the other realities of life more so than adults are, especially before the ages of 4 and 5. And so parents need to be nurturing that, as opposed to pounding it out. And don't get me started on our religious institutions. They all but destroy it. So here in this family, they're open about it. That's just wonderful. So when I asked her to tell me more about the stranger, she immediately and nonchalantly, this is what kids do, referred to her visitor as the angel of the dying. I asked her how she knew this, and she told me that the angel had told her so. She had been trying to tell us about the angel for quite a while. But usually, we adults were so caught up in the day-to-day activities of life that we tended to ignore her ramblings about her imaginary friend. Now, this is just what I stated. This is just what I cautioned you about. You know, if you have a child and the child starts talking to you about visitations from somebody that you can't see, you need to pay attention. However, her persistence in reading about other people's encounters spurred me to sit down with her and listen. My oldest son, after his grandfather died, he started having dreams about his grandfather, and he had dreams. Every time he was in a bad place, his dog would come to him and tell him it was going to be okay. And what I did is I sat down with him and I talked to him about after-death communication. And he is now going on 20 years old, and every once in a while, when he's having a really hard time, he has a dream about he and his grandfather playing golf in the house. That's what they used to do. Now, I know. My father-in-law was a big child. They would play golf in the house. And the dreams are about the two of them having conversation, here and now, today conversation. And he always wakes up feeling very reassured. I am of a mother to her, as her real mom passed away 2 years ago, so we are very, very close. So this woman who has taken an interest in this child is a friend. She sat calmly and told me why the angel took her mother and why she also had to leave so soon. At first, I didn't understand. Later that day, she came running up to me during dinner, grabbed my hand, and literally pulled me from my seat, insisting that her angel wanted to meet me. It was about 8:30 p.m. as we went out into the yard. She told me to sit on the grass while she went into the woods to get him. What I saw next was absolutely incredible. She emerged from the woods in a swirl of leaves floating about a foot off the ground. This is brilliant. This woman has visual contact with this angel of the dying. Brilliant. I mean, I think it's brilliant. She was skipping playfully on thin air and was hand in hand with a figure so dark that it literally had no shadows. I froze for an instant as they came to where I sat. Every hair on my body stood on end. Now, what's funny is, you know, of course, the human mind always tries to make sense out of things that we can't understand. But in this situation, this poor woman was just taken completely and totally off guard. My niece came behind me, putting her hand on my shoulder, telling me not to be afraid. She then took my hand and put it in his. The next thing I remember was my husband hovering over me in the yard and a group of paramedic workers attending to my niece about 3 feet away. She passed away that night from a brain hemorrhage. The whole event changed all of our lives. She still comes to visit and my hand still tingles. So in this instant, the angel of the dying, as this girl called this angel, came to her to pave the way for her own passing and to talk to her about why her mother had to die. And so this little girl had no fear of death. But then this angel went a step farther for Rose, Rosemarie Cortenga, from Laredo, Texas. This angel came to let this woman know that there is more to life after death than society has led us on to believe. Isn't that fantastic? That's just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful departing vision. Okay, I'm going to share one more with you before we finish up for the night. Death has been no stranger to me this year as I have lost a child. There is nothing worse than losing a child. It's one of the experiences as a clinician. It's one of the hardest deaths to recover from. I have seen parents not grieve, and I have seen them divorce in the end. I have seen them sit with immense anger towards any concept of a higher power or, of course, religious institutions. I have seen them make themselves sick over the loss of a child. I really do believe that my grandmother willed herself to die after my mother died. She had lost my uncle during World War II, and then my mother died, and she never could grieve. She wouldn't allow herself to grieve. She wouldn't talk about death, couldn't, you know, nothing. And she willed herself to die, and then my grandfather died shortly after that. Anyway, so on a hot evening in July, I set my altar in the south over the mantle to perform a protection spell for myself and our coven. And so this woman is a pagan. Now, a word about pagans. Being a pagan does not mean that you are into the occult and you're out to hurt people. Pagans, it's a religion. It's a serious religion. It's a religion that's based in ancient, metaphysical, naturalistic belief systems. And it's just one more avenue to get to the end goal where we're all headed. If you don't understand what a pagan is, you need to know that there are pagan groups all over the United States. There's an international organization of pagans, and they're all connected with one another, and they're very into honoring nature. And the rituals that they perform allow them to get in touch with their concept of a higher power or a sense of spirituality. That's all ritual is. That's all prayer is. That's all chanting is. That's all prayer beads are. When I say the Shema Israel, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, all I'm saying is a prayer to help me get in touch with my spiritual side. So, if you don't know anything about pagans, plug them into your search engine, get a reality check. Okay, so let's go back to our pagan woman who had her experience. I gazed out upon a seemingly normal, lovely night. So she was in prayer. She was lighting her candles and she was appreciating nature. But as I turned, I felt a cool breeze that seemed to pass through me. All the hair on my arms stood straight up. Everybody's hair stands up on their arms and their necks and everything else when they encounter otherworldly figures. In the southeast corner of my room loomed a black figure so tall it appeared to bend forward as it reached higher than the ceiling. I'd never experienced such a thing before, and literally the words that filled my mind were, oh, an expletive, it's the Grim Reaper. And I ran quickly from the room. Yeah, some of us get a little spooked when we have our first paranormal experience. Lots of people get spooked. Yes, I know that's silly. I'm certain I would be found just as easily in the den, but as I had been in contemplation, I was filled with laughter, for I felt so ridiculous for my behavior. But I also felt very protected, and I knew that the ritual I had performed would succeed, and it did. After this experience, I began to feel a bit different about death and became more open to my dark side. Before, death was the enemy. So here is this pagan person. You know, like these pagans, this is their gig. This is their deal, you know. They're out there looking at death, and it's part of the life cycle, and it's something we should embrace, and there's nothing to be, you know. You have the winter solstice, and the summer solstice, and the turning of the seeds and the seasons, and you got this poor pagan here, and she's scared to death until she has a date with death. Before, death was the enemy. I did good to prevent its presence, for it was the thief that stole what I loved and gave me grief. See, a lot of us who don't deal with our grief about our loved ones who have moved on, death does become something to fear, and it does become the enemy. That's why it's so important to grieve. My views were changing. Also, it was at this point that the spirits began to show themselves to me. That's the interesting thing about having a paranormal experience and really making peace with life after death, is that what that does is that actually opens us up to more paranormal experiences. what happened to me when I came home for probably about 6 months is that every time somebody died, I had contact with them. I mean, I was more open. Months passed, and it was now October, and my group and I were in the midst of All Hallows ritual. We sensed a gate opening to us through which many spirits came and interacted with us. Then all of a sudden, there he was again. He appeared in the doorway. His presence blocked out everything else, taller and blacker than the night, hooded with a cloak or something that seemed to float behind him. He walked out the door and through myself and a friend. You see, my friend began to describe the exact sensations I was having. Physically, at the same time, they were actually happening to me and to my friend. Being filled with ice, cold, electrical tingles from the base of our spines to the top of our heads, the sensation ceased for both of us at the same time, as well at the exact moment he passed through completely. These are very powerful accounts. When we have an experience at the same time as somebody else, we have a dream at the same time that somebody else has, we have a visualization of an otherworldly creature at the same time as somebody else, that those are the most powerful examples of life after death, in my opinion. I think I'll do a whole show on that. I'll do a whole show on examples of experiences that people have had either in groups or they have had with somebody else. Those are really hard to dismiss. Let's see. He walked over to our fire pit, which was reduced to embers by this time. He appeared to have a staff or a stick. As he stirred the embers with it, he just looked at me straight in the face, but I didn't see a face, just a shadow and his cloak. And he looked at me and he said, "Never fear me, for nothing is forever." And then he simply merged with the night and was gone. And I wished he wasn't, because I wanted to touch him and embrace him. And I was filled with the most deep feeling of peace. There we go again. It wasn't a scary encounter for her. I was very sad that he was gone, and tears filled my eyes. It was so hard for me to remain composed, and when our ritual was over, we talked among ourselves about our experiences. I have no fear of death anymore. I see that it is, in fact, birth from one world to the next. Now, you know what? See, that's what happens. When we have these encounters, I was with a group of people, a couple of days ago, and this one woman, she had had a near-death experience. And what had happened to her was that she's a recovering alcoholic, and she had gotten herself into a jam with a bunch of drugs. And she OD'd. She OD'd big time. And when she OD'd, she had an out-of-body experience. And during her out-of-body experience, she was able to look down, and she saw her husband come into the room, and she watched him make a phone call to the paramedics. And then she went into another room where her mother was sitting, and she saw her mother get up and scream, and she could see everything in detail, what her mother was wearing, and her mother ran into the room with her husband, and both of them were just very, very upset. And then the paramedics showed up, and they started working on her, and she decided to leave the room, and because she couldn't relate to the body that they were working on, which is a real common experience for people who have a near-death experience, is that they'll look at their own body and they don't feel any feelings for it. And what she actually did is she went outside and she went to the next door neighbor's house and went to visit her girlfriend and watched her girlfriend cook a meal. And then when she was revived, she remembered everything and reported everything back to her husband and her mother and her girlfriend, and they all sat there with their mouths hanging on the floor. And after that experience, she got sober, and now what she does is she's a massage therapist, and she's a wonderful, nurturing person who she's been sober for probably 25 years, and she's just become a real caretaker and is of service to those around her. But one of the things that she shared is she said, you know, death just doesn't scare me anymore. It's not like I'm going to go seeking death, because if I seek death before it's my time, I'm just going to have to come back and do all this stuff all over again. And I've got all these lessons to learn. I'm supposed to be learning about having a decent relationship, which I can't have. I'm still trying to figure that one out. I have issues with my kids. I need to resolve some of that stuff. I've got some self-esteem junk I need to take a look at. I've got all these lessons I'm supposed to be working out in this life. And so I'm going to take advantage of my time here. I'm not going to blow it. I'm not going to waste it. So many of us, gang, get up each morning, and what we do is we click into the rat race. We click into the rat race. We worry about making a pile of money. We worry about, we obsess. We obsess on how we look. We're obsessed with finding the perfect mate. We get into all of the game playing that society has led us to believe is absolutely necessary for a happy existence. And you know what we do? We lose ourselves. We separate ourselves from those around us. We separate ourselves from our community. We separate ourselves from our priorities. And we separate ourselves, most importantly, from ourselves. So I have a little suggestion for you. I had a patient in today who, she has a horribly horrific, horrific load. She's a hospice nurse, works with death and dying all the time. She decided to go back to school. She's overloaded herself. She told me she wanted to take flying lessons. And I said, well, when are you going to fit the flying lessons in with all this other kind of, all this other stuff you're doing? I mean, you think you're supposed to graduate next month, when actually you could like put it off a little bit and slow down and take your classes over a prolonged period of time. And, you know, you could graduate next year. It's not such a big deal. I said, when you're lying on your deathbed and you're looking back on your life, will you regret that you didn't take time out to go take flying lessons? And she looked at me and she said, yes. So my message to you tonight is, if you are afraid of death and dying, get online, go look at books, read books on after-death communication, departing visions, near-death experiences, go to conferences like IANS conferences, International Association of Near-Death Studies, and take a look at what it is you're running from. Are you running? Are you working so hard you don't have time to slow down and look at your kids? Are you working so hard that your only way to chill out is to light up a joint or take a drink? What is it that you're separating yourself from? When you are on your deathbed, what is it that you will regret? Well, our time has come to an end, gang. I'm sure that I'm going to still be a little flaked out with jet lag. So I'm going to go have a nice cup of kava tea and see if I can calm down a little bit. Please know that there are a wonderful assortment of incredible radio shows and radio hosts on this network. And tune in tomorrow night and the following night. Don't be a stranger. If you have an idea for the show or if there's something that you want to talk about, email me at drsbrandon, D-R-S-B-R-A-N-D-O-N, at sbcglobal.net, or you can check out my website at www.carla, C-A-R-L-A, Will, W-I-L-L-S, Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N.com. And as always, it is a pleasure to spend this time with you. So, I'm signing out. Good night and sweet dreams.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.